Sylvain Pillay is CEO of 360 Degrees South and Zero Gravity TV and Media. The man's been in music and television for nearly 30 years, so it's about time we get to know him. Hello, Sylvain. How are you doing?
Hi, Janine. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Listen, I'm always curious. I mean, especially when I get a biography that's as lengthy and as fat as yours, nah? Then I'm curious about that guy there at home, the one with the pantoffels, the one that only your wife and the dog knows. Who's that, Sylvain?
To be honest, you know, my entire life, Janine, has been linked to either music or media in some way. So at home, if you ask my kids, what does your dad do? They'll say he's a musician. So I'm a musician. I perform under the pseudonym The Eskimo Writer. So I write and release music as well. So everything like in the music industry is very important to me, but also play sports. I still play competitive sports. I play cricket, paddle, tennis. So I kind of love competing and being in competition, you know, so which for our industry is kind of the basis that you need, because it's a very competitive industry. You know, everything that you do is judged by the public. So, like whatever you do, you push for some degree of excellence, or you try, or you're driven to perfection in that way. You know?
Yeah, I've read that thing about you're only as good as your last performance, your last song, your last whatever visual that someone saw, and that leaves the last impression and out of sight, out of mind. So it's a monster. You got to feed it the whole time. But it seems this music thing of yours, I mean, that's where you started out, isn't it? In a music store in Durban. And then how did
that's
you get
correct.
Involved in the music industry? We're going to get to the media later, but obviously this is in your blood. So it's something that you've wanted to do always.
Yeah. It's very interesting. To be in the music store back in those days, in the 90s, any employee needed to have exceptional musical knowledge. So they used to do a test for you to get into the store in the first place.
Sure.
And then over time, I mean, I've got an exceptional memory and I've got an exceptional knowledge of music, all sorts of music. And the reps for the record companies used to come into the store to obviously take orders or to sell music to us. And it got to the point where I'd memorized kind of all the catalog numbers on the CDs and the tapes. So I was ordering the music by catalog number. So the guy from EMI was really, really impressed with me. He's like, how do you do that? And I was like, I don't know. I just got a great interest in music. And he says, you have to come and work for us at EMI. So I always say that success is when opportunity meets preparation. So when opportunity was presented, I was prepared for it. You know, and that's how I got into the music industry at record company level. You know?
Okay. Then you worked with all the greats, like all the big names. But if you had to choose one moment in that specific time in your life when you were working in the music industry, yeah, even managing the labels and all of that, if you had to choose like the one highlight, what would it be?
I think for me, there's a band called Michael Lynch Rock, which became very big in South Africa. You may remember them.
Yeah.
And Michael Lynch Rock had released 4 or 5 albums in South Africa, all of them semi-successful. And at the time, I decided to do a greatest hits album, Michael Lynch Rock greatest hits. It had never been done before. So I had to get on a call with the band and their management saying that, listen, in South Africa, we're planning to do greatest hits. Will you guys support it? And they said yes. So we eventually released this Paint My Love. It was Michael Lynch Rock's greatest hits. And Michael Lynch Rock actually agreed to come to South Africa to tour that album and promote it. And I think that album ended up selling something like 8 times platinum in South Africa. So it was a massive success. It was a fantastic idea, inspired idea, let's say that. But working with the band, doing 3 tours with them, and remember, they were not famous in too many other places in the world. And I think India, Denmark, where they came from, and South Africa were like the 3 countries where they were actually popular. So I always look back on that and say, well, okay, that was something really unique that happened, and something that I initiated and kind of promoted. So that was like, I think, one of the big highlights for me in the music industry. And I think it gave me like a lot of acclaim in the industry amongst my peers and amongst other companies for what we had done in the industry at the time.
It's amazing to think about it, that I wouldn't have known that name if you didn't do your job while you were at EMI. But,
exactly.
But if you're that successful in what you do and you love what you do that much, why then leave it to go to Endemol?
At the time at EMI, I was still in my early 20s. I'd done a lot, I'd seen a lot, I experienced a lot very quickly. It was a great learning curve for me. I just signed Watershed to EMI. It was a big feather in my cap at the time. And I looked around me, everyone was kind of, even the people above me were kind of a similar age. And this company called Synapse actually approached me to come into media, doing something called product placement for the soapies. Now, I was ambitious and I was curious, so I thought I'd take a leap of faith. And I mean, my initial job got to Endemol was actually working on all the soapies, selling sponsorship and product placements in them. And one of the soapies happened to be Isidingo, which was being produced by Endemol at the time. And that's how the Endemol connection happened. So it's a feeling sometimes that you have when you're young in terms of where your path will lead you. You don't know for sure. You take a leap of faith. And in the end, it brought me into television and never let me too far away from music.
Okay, now you're in television, which is a whole nother ball game. I mean, it still gets the creative juices. It gives you that meaning and the high of creating something new. What makes it worthwhile? What do you enjoy most?
I think for me, like if we look at even in the name Zero Gravity, you know, like I named the company because I wanted to do things that were altruistic, to make content or to make programs that either inspired people, impacted people, or influenced people. You know, that's really what it is. And it's about entertaining people, you know. So every show that we create, every show that we produce, you never know how successful it's going to be. You have a hunch, you put all your creative juices in there, and that chase of the next hit or the next show that you do that will inspire people is one of the motivational factors. But then you do things that are very satisfying. Like Isidingo was a very satisfying show to produce. But then I did a show like All You Need Is Love, which was on SABC many years ago. And it really impacted lives, changed people's lives for the better. And it's very satisfying when you look back and think about all these people that you've kind of impacted with a TV show like that, which is no different to some shows we've done recently, you know, also. So our business is a very difficult business because there's no actual product. You've got to create the product, you've got to sell the product, you've got to produce it. And then it gets broadcast and then it gets judged by everyone, for better, for worse, right? So you're always on the line. But I think that's quite exciting in a way. You know, that chase and that thrill, most people in television are in it because they enjoy that part of it. It's very satisfying when it's successful.
Yeah, the thing is, it's subjective. I mean, even while you were in the music industry, I remember in the music industry, now you sit in a boardroom and everybody's clued up so they know their music, but it's still taste driven. So one guy will think something is really well done and the guy right next to him with the same years of experience will think it's absolute junk. And it's the same with any kind of creative field. So now you, having been in TV for a long time, what makes something work for you? I mean, obviously, it has the money. Okay. The money needs to talk. But for you, when are you satisfied?
That's a great question, Janine. That's actually the most important question you could ask in television, right? So, and I think with my experience now, it's what I tell young creatives and young people in television. Because when people get into television, everyone has an idea of what they think they want to make, right? It's a passion. Let's call it a passion project. But it's not necessarily the one that's going to be successful or that people are going to watch. So the first question we ask is that who do we serve on TV? And that's how I look at it. And we serve the audience. So we do an incredible amount of work on audience research, looking at what audiences want to watch, what they're entertained by, what their trends are. And we start creating shows actually based on what audiences want to watch. If we feel like the audience will not watch it, we actually don't create it. We go in another direction. So there's a kind of science to it, but it comes with a bit of experience, a bit of technical knowledge, a bit of understanding of broadcasting, and a great understanding of the psychographic of viewers. Because different viewers, even in different areas in South Africa, different language groups, watch different things. So, you know, we've got to segment our creativity in such a way that we find the right product for the right people at the right time. It's not an exact science, but I think the experience helps curb the creative towards being more specific and more likely to be successful, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, when you study journalism, they teach you that bad news sells. Nah? So if you've got an agenda to inspire and to influence, if that gives meaning to all the hours and all the sweat and the late nights and everything like that, do people want to be inspired and influenced, or do they just want to be entertained?
I think so. You know, and in journalism, you see, I mean, most mass media at this point sells bad news. And it's a very convenient, easy tool. For me, it's a very lazy tool to use because good news sells even more. So I think positive news is what people want to watch more. And I'll tell you how we tested this year. I run an entity called Bright Vibes Africa. Bright Vibes Africa. It's on Facebook. And I'm partnered with a few people around the world. And what Bright Vibes does, it only tells and creates positive and inspiring stories of people around the world. And like the number of views and the engagement we get with that is so much better. And I think for Africa particularly, South Africa and Africa, what the country needs is more positive news. It's about not just showing the world, and this is our philosophy at Zero Gravity, it's not just showing the world the best version of Africa, but showing Africa the best version of itself. It's like if you can inspire people and show them what they can become and what they can do with their collective energy and positivity, it has the ability to change countries, to change mindsets. You know, so we may not necessarily be able to do that en masse, but in whatever way we can do it with the shows we make, if we can get just an ounce of that out into the world, then we've done our job.
Absolutely. Okay, so now you guys are launching Gospel Superstars on ETV. So what's the concept?
So Gospel Superstars essentially searches for the best gospel singer. It's very unique, the format, in the sense that we've composed 12 original songs, which we ask people to enter for the right to sing. So in the audition phase, so people chose a specific song saying, I want to enter with this audition song. And we put them on a website, and people send their entries on. Then we did the auditions, and people sang across each of the 12 songs. And for each of the 12 songs, we shortlisted 6 finalists. So we have a total of 72 finalists where the show starts, episode 1. And from there, we start whittling it down to the top 12. At the top 12, it's a very unique part of the format. It means each of those people have now won that particular song. And then we release the songs into the market. So by episode 10, there'll be 12 singles released with the 12 singers of each song, or the singers of each song basically being released. Then those 12 people go further. They then compete against each other for the rights of Gospel Superstars, to win Gospel Superstars and to win the R1 million cash prize and a full record company deal with Gallo Music. So it's a fantastic prize. It's a massive prize. It hasn't been done in gospel music for a long time. And, you know, if you have to go back to the 80s with Shell Road to Fame, where the best gospel artists were found historically, and that's over 40 years ago. So there's been different gospel shows, but nothing on the scale that goes out to the market. And I can tell you, we found incredible singers in the show. It's just the most amazing experience that we had producing and making the show. It was positive. I think the sense that we had gospel music on that, it made our crew, it made the contestants. You know, even though it was a competition, there was a great degree of camaraderie and well-being and good intent, I suppose, in the entire show. You know?
Okay, well, I love the idea that you had the songs ready, because in gospel music, 80% of the music that people send in the songs aren't really good. So at least you cut out all of that. You had the quality fabulous to listen to from the beginning. But do we know the judges?
You do know the judges. We've got 3 of them. The first one is from a record, is from Gallo Music. He's a guy named Kateko Maluleke. And he's a very experienced guy, but obviously he's going to be the guy that's releasing all this music. So it was important to have Gallo's view on it as one of the judges. The other 2 judges are well-known judges. The second one is Rebecca Malope, who is South Africa's biggest gospel artist, so historically. And actually, Rebecca and I go back many years. When I worked at EMI, CCP, one of the first artists I got to work with was Rebecca back in the late 90s, or with us, kind of mid-90s, you know?
Yeah.
So Rebecca's one of the judges, and she's fabulous. She brings energy. She brings excitement to the format. And the third judge is Kaya Ntetwa. Kaya famously is a former winner of Idols and has also won a show that I produced for Edinburgh called Clash of the Choirs. He's a winner of both the shows. So he's a unique talent in that he's won 2 talent shows and technically gifted. And obviously, he's a great gospel artist as well. So we've got a combination of experience, youth, technical knowledge, passion, you know, for this industry in our 3 judges. So it's very exciting. And what they brought to the table was a very, very sound judging panel.
Yeah.
To be able to screen these contestants.
Okay, so we know talent-wise it's covered, voice quality-wise it's covered, but if it's gospel music, then you'll have to cover some heart as well. Is there any opportunity for us to get to know the contestants during the show?
You will. In fact, the way the show is designed, it's designed with that in mind, actually. So my objective, I said to my team in producing the show, when we get to episode 10 or 11, this top 12 needs to be household names. So you'll see as the show goes on, even though there are performances, there's a lot of social media, there's a lot of backstories that we shot, interviews, where do people come from, why do they enter this year, how can the Million Rand change their life if they win, what happens if they don't, what happens if they just get a recording deal and they're able to release a song. So different journeys, you'll get to know these contestants, and by the time you get to episode 13, you'll know them all very well. And I think the winners or the top three or the top six, even the top 12, will have great affinity with the audience, because I think everyone out there in South Africa will find a piece of them in some of these contestants, because they'll share their journey at some point. You
know? Okay, so when's it going to be broadcasted? When can we see it?
You will see it on ETV. It starts on Sunday, the 25th of May at 6 p.m. on ETV. It'll also be available on EVOD after that. So if people want to catch up, if people have access to that, they'll be able to watch it. And then on Gospel Superstars, on our Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok handles, there'll be quite a bit of behind-the-scenes social media starting from next week on this. So there'll be a lot of other stories which will not be in the show necessarily that people will be able to follow over the next 13 weeks. So there'll be a lot of media out there, and it's going to be very exciting. You know, the whole idea is to create some excitement around gospel music again, to get people excited, and then hopefully at the end reveal a star that all of South Africa will buy into.
Savan, it sounds like you love doing what you do, that you love creating what you do, and when it goes out there, that you're proud of what goes out, which is awesome, so you can still do it for the next 80 years. Listen, we are going to follow Gospel Superstars, obviously, but if we want to follow you, your own music, the Eskimo writer and everything like that, how do we follow you?
You'll find me on social media under Eskimo, at Eskimo Writer. That's my handle on Instagram and on Facebook. That's where you can get my music. I'm also available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, like whichever platform people listen to their music on, you'll find my music there. Even on YouTube, I think there's quite a few videos on YouTube. So people just search for The Eskimo Writer, you'll be able to find that.